This evening, our guest is Maxine Hadley, author of Your Death is Necessary. It's being advertised as a thriller. Is it a thriller?
Well, my publishers call it a thriller.
It certainly looks like a thriller from the dust jacket.
Lurid, isn't it?
I suppose the first thing, really, is to define what we're talking about when we use the word thriller.
I'd say they're novels that thrill.
Wilkie Collins called his books sensation novels.
Yes, he did. Because they cause the reader to feel the sensations of dread, horror, suspense. But I think all novels should have those sensations, at least to a degree.
What's the difference between a thriller and a mystery?
In a murder mystery, the question is something like, who killed Lord Frumfry in the library? In a thriller, the questions are, will this or that character commit murder? What's the killer after? Will he kill again?
And you've got to have a good villain.
A good villain is essential.
Although, in my own experience, I don't think I've ever encountered anyone who was an out-and-out villain.
I have.
Really?
Oh, yes. So have you. You just didn't know it.
You may be right there. So then, what are the essential elements of a good thriller?
Well, it should have at least one murder, preferably more, in ascending levels of violence. There must be suspense. Questions must be posed, events foreshadowed, and of course, the stakes must be high.
High enough for one of the characters to commit murder, I should think?
Yes. Motive is everything, even if the murder is unplanned.
Is an unplanned murder really murder? Or is it what we call manslaughter?
That's a legal distinction. To my way of thinking, the difference between premeditated murder and, say, a murder of opportunity is a question of degree.
Opportunity. Interesting.
Opportunity, circumstance, situation. Timing is everything.
What else is essential to a satisfying thriller?
Oh, there are so many things. Setting. Does the story take place in a penthouse or a country cottage or a row house? Period. Is it a contemporary thriller with automobiles and airplanes, or does it take place in the land of Sherlock Holmes with handsome cabs and gaslight? There's a world of difference between a murderer who has access to telephones, taxicabs, and one who's denied these modern conveniences.
Because they haven't been invented yet.
Yes. Fingerprints, ballistics, photographs, all these are of endless use to the police. Less so the novelist.
Which of your characters do you identify with in your fiction? The murderer or the victim?
I'm always more interested in the murderer than the victim. That's where my sympathies lie. But then, I'm a bit perverse.
Oh, I'm sure that's not the case.
No, I'm serious. My murderers are my protagonists, so I must identify with them. If I didn't, it would be malpractice.
Oh, no, come.
Shakespeare knew what his murderers were after. What they wanted. I mean, he had to. Otherwise, they wouldn't be so persuasive.
Richard III, for example.
Yeah, Shakespeare knew. Doesn't mean Shakespeare killed kiddies in a tower, but it might mean he knew what it was like to want to.
A bit aggressive, that, isn't it?
Writing is an aggressive act. Writers take their anger, their frustration, their resentment and fury, and turn it into a machine gun burst of words.
And if the machine gun bursts hit their mark, the writer makes a killing?
You like a metaphor, don't you?
Well, I was simply taking
No, it's good. I'm going to borrow that.
But seriously, when a book's done, when you've finished shooting your bullets, is the anger, the resentment, the fury, what you will, gone? Dissipated? Expiated?
For a time, until it builds up again.
Ah, the author as serial killer.
Very Jack the Ripper.
Or Jack the Writer.
Well, he did write letters, didn't he, to Scotland Yard, taunting the police. Just another frustrated writer.
What about the hero?
I tend not to write heroes, at least not in the conventional sense.
No strong-jawed fellows, eh?
No. No strong-jawed fellows.
What about strong-jawed women?
I'm not sure I know what you mean.
A strong woman, be she heroine or murderer.
Oh. All one's characters have to be strong.
Point taken. Back to your own writing. Do you like to write torture scenes?
I was brought up on thrillers of a kind where Bulldog Drummond gets in the grips of the villain and he suffers. Either he's drugged or something happens to him. But I don't like to get too serious. I get tired of the fact that the hero in other people's thrillers gets a bang on the head with a revolver butt and he's perfectly happy afterwards, just a bump on his head. They recover too quickly. If you're banged on the head with a revolver butt, the first thing you do is vomit.
Oh, dear. I didn't know that. How do you develop your characters? I mean, it seems to me that in your book, the character building is, to a considerable extent, in the dialogue, which, of course, I think is some of the very best dialogue written in any prose today.
Why, thank you.
You also like to make jokes.
Yeah, I can't help making jokes. It's a fault, and it gets me in trouble sometimes.
A question about status, or rather the lack of status in being a so-called thriller writer?
You can write a long, very lousy historical novel full of sex, and it can be a bestseller and be treated respectfully. But a very good thriller writer who writes far, far better just gets a little paragraph, of course.
Yes, I know. That's very true.
Mostly. There's no attempt to judge the writer as a writer.
But you yourself are judged as a writer, and Dashiell Hammett was, I think.
Well, yes, but how long did it take for that to happen? You starved to death for 10 years before your publisher knows you're any good.
Yes, quite.
I mean, the publisher, that's what gets a writer thinking about murder.
What sort of murderer would you be?
An overconfident one.
But it takes confidence to pull off a murder, doesn't it?
Yes, but there's confidence and there's cockiness.
So where do you get your material? Is it always an American setting?
Well, I lived many years in England, but I don't think I could write about it in any sort of realistic way. Of course, now half the writers in America live in England.
That's very true.
As far as my material is concerned, I'm afraid I get mine by going to places and taking down copious notes because I can't remember anything.
Again, to go back to villains?
Of course. The difficulty is to set in oneself and to be able to persuade the reader that your villain is not to be pitied for being a sick man. It's difficult to depict somebody who is remorselessly vibrant without being a psychopath. On the other hand, if you create pity for him at once, it's difficult. And that's what I mean about villains. They're very difficult people to build up.
Must he have a very human side?
He may be very kind to his family, but in his business, illegitimate, he may be quite ruthless.
Well, you've got to know these people. You can't invent them. You don't find anyone, really, that's all bad.
I'm not certain I agree.
We've managed to get an advanced copy of your novel, Your Death is Necessary, the one that's just coming out. And I'm very interested in one passage that talks about violence and so on and so forth. It seems to me very well put. Would you be willing to read a bit for us?
I'd love to. To set it up, a man has gone into this girl's bedroom, having overheard her conversation as a blackmailer. She brought out a small automatic up from her side. I looked at it. Oh, guns, I said. Don't scare me with guns. I've lived with them all my life. I've used an old Derringer's single shots, the kind the riverboat gamblers used to carry. As I got older, I graduated to a lightweight sporting rifle, then a .303 target rifle, and so on. I once made a bull at 900 yards, an open sight, in case you don't know. The whole target looks the size of a postage stamp at 900 yards.
A fascinating career, she said.
Guns never settled anything, I said. They're just a fast curtain to a bad second act.
I think that's rather well put.
It's at least a far more sensible point of view than the one which some writers put forward in their books, where people are shooting each other so much and so often that you need a program to tell who's in the act and who's a spectator.
Do you think there's such a thing as a perfect murder?
Absolutely. On paper, I could plan a murder better than most people, but I doubt I could carry it out.
Really?
Oh, I might be able to carry it out, but in stories, things turn out as the author plans them to. In real life, they don't. I'd make some stupid mistake and not realize it until the end when I saw that everyone was looking at me.
Yes, yes, quite. Can you give our listeners an example?
Oh, let's see. A housewife makes dinner for her husband. Spaghetti with mushrooms. The husband eats the spaghetti and dies, apparently of a heart attack. As his body is being taken away, something falls from his trouser cuff. They test it. It's full of poison. What fell out of his trouser cuff? A button mushroom.
A button mushroom? Well, now I must remember that the next time my wife offers to make me spaghetti.
Yes, I'd pass on Italian cuisine altogether.
Very good, very good.